Hey, I'm Josh, co-founder and CEO of Expansive, and this is the FM Fix, our podcast. Our guest today is someone who spent his career leading construction, development, and FM operations that combine structure, data, and people power. Grant Burrows has managed national facilities portfolios, led compliance and safety programs, and implemented operational frameworks that turn data into action. He's known for leading by example, putting people and performance at the centre of his approach while delivering measurable value to clients and stakeholders. In this conversation, we'll unpack the reality of modern FM, what's working, what's not, and how FMs can use data, teamwork and communication to raise standards and make their impact visible. Grant, you've worked at serious scale. So let's start with the basics. What does FM actually look like day to day?
FM for me, I suppose that a typical day is starting early in the morning. What's happened overnight? You know, what problems have happened overnight? Obviously, I'm typically working in restaurants. What are you coming into in the morning? And then that's often half an hour to an hour in the day with your team, trying to establish the facts, because you get lots of conflicting stories and pieces of information from different people. So you kind of need to find out what's really happened and then work out your action plan as to how you're going to put it right. Once the overnight problems are sorted, then it's a question of your day-to-day routine. So you might be meeting suppliers. You might be having a performance review meeting with the supplier, setting targets for your team, working with a construction team to look at refurbishments that are coming up, what items in a refurb need to be looked at from an FM point of view. And then, you know, making plans for any significant times coming up, Christmas, peak trading, summer weather, winter weather, all of looking at the calendar all the time as to what's the next potential problem that you need to put plans in place to ensure everything goes smoothly.
So from what I'm hearing, it's a very diverse role. Mm. Is that what drew you into it?
I think, like a lot of people, I came into FM by accident to a certain extent. You know, I've always been in property and construction, so refurbishment programs and new store openings or restaurant openings. And then I've moved into FM as opportunities came along to take on that additional responsibility. I wouldn't say it is something that I'd planned to get into, but I do enjoy it, and it's been pretty rewarding in what a lot of people think of as not necessarily a particularly glamorous part of most businesses.
No, we hear that often, is that it's often quite undervalued, maybe especially by a senior leadership team, and who only really care about something when there's a problem, not when things are running smoothly.
Yeah.
How do we change that?
It's an interesting one, because you know, you're right. It's unglamorous. It's people are only wanting to know about it and speak to the people in the team when there's a problem. And then suddenly they want to speak to that team all the time. Immediate answers are needed. Why has this got wrong? When's it going to be back? When are we going to open? So I think the challenge is, how do you convince the senior leadership teams that investing in maintenance and preventative maintenance can deliver better results, lower downtime, less closures, less times where teams are being unproductive because their restaurants or retail units are not operating?
So for people listening, what are your top three tips to elevate the importance of FM to senior leadership team?
It would be presenting to them fact impacts on how spending money in a preventative way can actually save you money and downtime in the long run. And, you know, I think senior teams, they very much work on data given to them. If you can demonstrate that you can reduce the amount of closures or downtime in your restaurants or your units by spending X amount of money on planned maintenance, it's relatively straightforward to get that momentum moving. Obviously, we are living in a time at the moment where spending money on what is seen as hidden costs is quite difficult to convince a senior leadership team, because they're struggling for sales, the costs are going up, and it's quite a difficult balance to get right.
I couldn't agree with you more. I was actually walking out of a Milton Keynes train station into a coffee shop. I won't say which coffee shop it was. And it was really interesting because the queues were building up because one of their baristas has stopped working. Mm-hmm. So what a lot of customers did, including myself, was walk to the next door coffee shop to go and grab a coffee. Mm. So increasing your, you know, the performance of your assets and making sure they're running when you need them to be running is just so important. So it's really interesting when you mentioned lost revenue.
Yeah, it's absolutely key. And, you know, I'll give an example of where I was working last Christmas. You know, we had a tremendous Christmas in terms of no downtime on key equipment in the restaurants, you know, which was a marked improvement on the previous year. And that's because we put a lot of time and effort into, just before Christmas last year, doing a lot of preventative maintenance and servicing on key pieces of equipment and having equipment in storage ready to go if it needs to be put into a site in an emergency situation.
So that's really interesting. So does seasonality play a part in your PPM strategy?
Yeah, absolutely. If you take air conditioning and refrigeration equipment, for example, it's often prone to letting you down at extreme weather conditions. So if it's extremely hot in the summer, you're likely to have air conditioning problems, breakdowns, and then you've got guests unhappy.
Yeah.
Vice versa, if it gets extremely cold in the winter, you start losing your heating.
Yeah.
And you've also got guests not happy. So putting time into planned maintenance ahead of those peak weather periods is the key. And it often pays you back.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So what do people often get wrong about FM? And what would you say it's really about?
I think most people's perception of FM is people just fixing problems, plugging holes. That's a typical scenario. I think the real FM is the work that goes on behind the scenes to ensure that those catastrophes don't actually happen. The planned maintenance, the having a good relationship with your suppliers to ensure that they're ready to look after you when they're really needed. Doing those checks behind the scene. So that's where the real work is. What people often see is the FM team running around trying to sort out a problem. And that's kind of, I think, what maybe some of the senior teams think FM do.
So it's the people element, the relationships. You know, you mentioned the importance of getting the best out of your supply chain. That is really important.
It's incredibly important. And I think one of the things I've always been very positive with is not only speaking to your suppliers when they've let you down, but also being very proactive with them and getting them in for regular performance reviews and giving them a pat on the back. They might even have some queries that they want to take up with you. You know, they might have had some payment issues. They might have had problems getting into your sites in the middle of the night. And it's sometimes having that open dialogue with your suppliers, you learn a lot about yourselves, as well as helping guide them if you feel that they're not quite giving you the level of service you want. So, yeah, I think that's a really, really good thing to continue to do with all your suppliers.
Does data play a part in that conversation with your supply chain?
Yeah, because, you know, typically you would have access through your CAFAM system to all of the performance metrics of your suppliers. So if I was going to have a performance review meeting with a supplier, I would be looking at the data up front and then identifying what their first fix rate performance is like. Are they turning up on time? Are they billing you accurately for the time they're on site? Mm. So you've got the data there, and your CAFAM system is crucial there to provide that for you. You can, at a click of a few buttons, you can print that off, share that with the supplier before the meeting, and then they can come to that meeting with answers or reasons why they may or may not have had problems.
I want to talk about your leadership style. What's your approach to building a strong FM culture where people will make a difference?
I like to let the people working with me in my team kind of develop their own way of doing things. I don't want to always give everyone the answers. And I can think of a few examples where I may have had a previous problem myself and it's come up again. And I could quite easily just say, well, this is what you need to do. Mm. But I like to try and let the team work their own way through it, hopefully to a successful outcome. If not, I might well step in and then give them some guidance. And I think by allowing your team to do that, it allows them to grow and feel that they're not just being managed and told how to do everything. And I've certainly found that to be a really, really positive way of running your team.
That's quite refreshing, because I feel in the UK, we're quite adverse to taking risks, making a mistake, and it's seen as quite negative, where in other countries, maybe specifically the US, they kind of celebrate those failures, they learn from those failures, yeah, and people grow from your mistakes.
Yeah.
So it's quite a refreshing approach to kind of empowering your team.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I can remember when I was younger, I was more fearful of making mistakes. But I think when you have made a number of mistakes in your career, you kind of get to learn that we all make mistakes and it's not the end of the world.
No.
And you won't make that same mistake. So you kind of need to let the people working in your team sometimes make that mistake so that they can move forward.
You've worked extensively with data and technology. What's one way FMs can use data better to guide decisions?
I think one thing for me, obviously AI is becoming quite a big thing at the moment. And I think there is an opportunity for CAFAM systems particularly to start to generate almost predicted likelihoods of failure. I think we all work in an environment where if a piece of equipment in a kitchen goes down, we then have to make a decision based on how old it is. Mm. Is it beyond economical repair? Should we repair it? Should we put a new one in? But I'm starting to think that with the data available, and if all operators were to share data, it would help build up an understanding that a fryer that's been in a restaurant for 5 years, there's a potential that that might fail in the next 6 months. Mm. So do you make decisions before the failure, or wait for it to happen? So I do think there's an opportunity there for technology to probably help in that decision-making process.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. I think AI is definitely here to stay. It's growing. People are constantly learning it. And I think the very strongest tech providers, but also the very strongest FMs, are the ones who are going to be embracing the technology and learning it. And the ones, unfortunately, who don't embrace it, I think will quickly be left behind.
Yeah.
You've led major compliance and safety programs. How do you balance governance with operational delivery?
Interesting, because, you know, we do live in a world now where there is fear of hazards, accidents, media, storms, whether it's food safety or people tripping over steps. There are lots of problems there and lots of risks to businesses. But we're also living in a climate where costs are being very challenged. Overheads are going up, labour's going up. We all know that a lot of businesses are struggling at the moment. So trying to make that balance is a difficult challenge. You know, my role has always been present options to a senior leadership team. What are the likelihood of this risk happening? How much would it cost for us to put a preventative measure in place? And then the conversation is then with the senior leadership team or the board to decide whether to invest in that piece of preventative maintenance. It is a big challenge.
What are your top tips? For someone listening, you know, you've experienced it, you've done it. What are your top tips for someone to overcome that challenge, especially with the senior leadership team?
Present them with figures, I think. Factual figures on the likelihood of that problem occurring and the risk to the business if it does happen, and what other people are doing as well. You know, one of the things that I've often done, and again with CAFM systems, you can find out what other people that are similar operators to yourselves are actually spending on certain pieces of maintenance. You know, how do you compare to Joe Blogg's restaurant that's a similar size of units as you, similar turnover? You could be spending considerably less on preventative maintenance than them, and that would be an opportunity to demonstrate to the senior team where there's quite a gap in level of spend. Something to consider.
So historic data, but also just getting out and about, speaking to other, you know, in your case, restaurant groups, and seeing what they're doing, taking those learnings and presenting them to the board.
Yeah. I think there is an opportunity for, although we're all competitors, you know, all restaurants or retailers are competitors. I think in the FM world, there's quite a benefit to actually share knowledge and information that would help each other.
Continuing on this theme, FM is often seen as a cost center, especially to SLT. How can we demonstrate its value to leadership? How can we change its perception?
It's all down to being able to demonstrate the lack of closures, lack of downtime, and improved performance. If you can demonstrate that with confidence to senior leadership teams, I don't think there's much of a decision to make. I think it's very easy if you can get the facts and share that with them.
So again, it's always coming back to data.
Yeah.
Data, data, data.
So absolutely. The more data you can get your hands on at the click of a button or looking at your phone or looking at your laptop, you can very quickly provide accurate data and then give that to your senior teams. And then the ball's in their court.
So for facility managers looking for investment of whatever it may be, you know, investing in their estates, investing in their buildings, investing in assets, what's your top tips when they approach again, leaderships?
Again, it's down to providing the data. I think it's, if you can demonstrate with solid data and solid costs, the benefit of investing in that preventative plan or more regular service, you can prove that it's going to save you in the long run downtime at key times. And, you know, when a restaurant closes, it's not just the money that the guest's not spending. It's the staff that are being paid. It's the wastage of ingredients and, you know, fridges, freezers going down. It's a massive cost.
Mm.
And if you can demonstrate that up front with that data, I think you've won the day.
Sustainability is a key topic. It's getting more and more important. Not that it was never important, and it appears to be landing on the FM's shoulders. What tips, advice would you give other FMs to make it practical and measurable?
We're living in a world at the moment where sustainability is a very powerful word. And I reckon I could have got 5 to 10 emails a week from different power and utility organizations that are offering you the chance to save money. I think one of the tips I would give is do not rush in too quickly, because you really need to do your due diligence first to understand if you are going to make a saving, if you were to install this new system that they're shouting about. A lot of these companies are coming at retailers and restaurant operators offering opportunities to save on your electric, gas, lighting, water, etc. But then they're not always backed up with 100% successful facts. You need to do your due diligence, speak to other people, involve other people in your team to understand what the potential cost savings may be.
FM often operates behind the scenes. How do you make your team work visible and valued?
Again, you know, it's one of those things where sometimes the FM team only come into the conversation when there's been a problem. But I've been involved in a few situations with my team where there's been some incredibly good work done, resolving a problem that was quite serious. And then it's a question of making everyone know how hard a particular person or team or maybe even a supplier worked on solving that problem and highlighting that to the senior leadership team. And it could be, you know, an email, it could be a letter, it could be a gift, you know, a gesture appreciating that person.
Now, I like that, because we often hear, as you said today, that FMs are only heard when something is going wrong, not when the building or the restaurant or the retail outlet is running smoothly, you know, everything's working perfectly. So I think we should continue to advocate for people to celebrate the successes, you know, celebrate when things are working as they should as well. So I know I do like that. So lastly, I'm interested to get your views on what needs to change in the industry and give it the recognition it deserves.
I thought about this one.
Yeah.
And I don't actually think there's that much wrong.
Yeah.
You know, I think the industry is only getting better.
Yes.
Because technology
yes.
is improving. So CAFAM systems
yeah.
are improving.
Yes.
Data's improving. Suppliers' communication ability is improving because engineers have apps on phones. We're all talking to each other on every social media platform. The ability to know quickly what's going on via updates is so much better now than it might have been 15 years ago when you were relying on a phone call. And often the phone call you got was an hour after the event.
That's really interesting. And it's great to hear how positive you are about the industry. So if all those things are getting better, why do you feel that it's not getting the recognition?
I think simply because it's just not seen as a glamorous part of an organization. You know, we're, if you take retailers or restaurants, you know, the exciting part is providing a product, providing food, providing a retail product, the service that goes with that, the lovely environment that the guest or the customer shops or eats in. But behind the scenes, all the work that's being done within FM, it's just not seen as something that's glamorous and something that you would shout about. It's quietly happening below the surface of the water and by a good team.
But so critical in providing that environment and making it a beautiful experience for your customers and your consumers.
Exactly.
We have a closing tradition. It's called the FM Fixed Reactive Round, where we just want to know the first thing that comes into your head. You ready?
Yeah.
What are the most important metrics you track to measure FM success?
Number of hours a restaurant's closed in a week.
What's one FM myth you'd love to debunk?
That operators believe that FM managers are permanently looking at their phones in the evenings at the weekends in case an email comes in.
What's your go-to strategy when everything starts to go wrong at once?
Typically, my strategy would be find out the facts. Once you've got some detail, give the senior team and the operators a update. Even if you haven't got all the answers, just give them an update. Say to them, I'll give you another update in an hour later, and make sure you give them that update in an hour later. Even if you still don't have all the facts, give them that update, because they will then believe and trust you that if you say, I'll update you at 10 a.m., you'll get an update at 10 a.m. And then continue to do that through the day until you've got the problem solved.
To me, you come across as a very calm individual. So I imagine calmness would come into your strategy.
Very much so. I could be quite irate underneath. I could be making some quite strong phone calls to a supplier or a contractor, but you know, it is about trying to keep calm and give that perception that everything is under control, the right people are involved, and then giving accurate information.
And lastly, what's one sustainability initiative you've seen that delivers both environmental and financial results?
In restaurant industry, which is what I've been in most recently, I think the conversion of some cooking equipment from gas to electric, certainly seeing positive results in terms of reducing costs, energy costs, improved quality of cooking, and it also allows you to be more sustainable because you don't need to run your extract system at such a high rate. You can have a smaller canopy with a smaller fan, and you can operate your restaurant in a smaller space.
Brilliant. Well, firstly, I want to thank you for joining us today. It's been really, you've got a really interesting story, and I hope you've enjoyed yourself.
Thank you very much, Josh. It's been good.